Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we talk about the body, right? What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be a person? There's the body, there's the spirit, there's the mind and the soul. So how does all that stuff kind of work together as we consider life as a Christian? And not just our own lives, but the lives of every single person that we will quite literally ever encounter. So how do we kind of deal with that, and why does it matter? I mean, we can sit here on Theology Thursday and talk about all these deep weeds kind of issues, but ultimately you got to go, okay, why does this matter? Understanding this truth, understanding what the Bible would tell us about these things, why does it matter? And then the other question is, how should it then show up in my life? And then we can talk about this as we talk about the body and the soul today. That'll eventually get us into places like abortion. I just spent the last hour and a half with one of my high school groups that I teach, high school homeschoolers, my Christian ethics class that I teach. We just spent the last hour and a half talking about abortion. That's a very difficult conversation as we get into all the details of that. But body and soul impacts your view of abortion. Transgenderism, which we've talked about a number of times on this show, and you can run, but you can't hide. Even things like Black Lives Matter. How do you begin to apply what the Bible teaches us about body and soul to everyday life? So it is, of course, Theology Thursday. This is Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, live from the campus of Southeastern Baptist, and our good friend Jamie Dew, who's the Vice President for Undergraduate Studies and Academic Support, as well as Professor of History and Ideas and Philosophy here at the not only the seminary, but the college at Southeastern. Jamie, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, thanks as always. Love being on the show.
Good to see you. Good to have you back. And this is a topic, Jamie, for you, which, you know, I know I can throw just about anything at you, but occasionally just want to throw the door open. And you really wanted to talk about this. Yeah. So talk about your own background and why are we diving into this one? This is pretty interesting.
Yeah. So I wanted to dive in this today because, you know, we've talked about this issue on the show before. And for years and years now, this has been a major area of interest for me philosophically, theologically, and just entertaining, fun, enjoyable. But it started off for me as something that was very meaningful, very personal. And then over the years, I have begun to see more and more and more that many, if not most, of the debates that we face in our culture really do come back to questions about personhood, human personhood in particular. What does it mean to be a human? Now, we don't tend to think of it that way, but ultimately speaking, most of these things really do come back to that. And how we answer these questions about what a person is absolutely vital.
Was there something in particular? Was it a phase of your life? Was it an incident? Was it something that you were dealing with personally? What kind of got you going down this road?
Yeah, so I go back to 2008. I was finishing my PhD here at Southeastern. I was writing on the area, the relationship of theology and science, how these two work together on like this philosophical level, how theories form and all of that. I was finishing that up. I was going to be graduating in about 2 months. I was also already teaching here as an adjunct, and I was pastoring at the same time, too. Wow. I was also a daddy of two newborn twins. And so I'm with my students, we're reading through René Descartes' Discourse on Method and Meditations on First Philosophy, which is really where what we call the mind-body problem is born. And the mind-body problem is basically it's this puzzle about the relationship of minds or souls, whatever you want to call them, that are immaterial and bodies that are physical. How in the world could they ever interact with each other since they never touch and they can never transfer energy? So academically, I'm teaching through this with my students in two different classes. As a pastor, I'm also doing funeral after funeral after funeral, and so questions about the soul and the immaterial are constantly there in my preaching and in my teaching at these funerals. And then there's my children. I'm watching their cognitive development, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, if my dualism is true, let me pause there. Dualism is this idea that bodies and souls both exist and they're different kinds of stuff and that we have these souls or we are these souls. And most Christians seem to affirm dualism. So I'm thinking to myself, if my dualism is true, then why is it that I'm watching my children's cognitive development and their mental life develop at the same rate and in correlation with their brain development? That didn't seem right to me. And so watching my children, I saw this problem. Pastoring, I saw this problem. intellectually, philosophically with my students, I saw this problem. And in 2008, it was, I tell people all the time, when I did my first PhD, I felt like I had to go out and find a topic to write on. And this time, this one found me, and I've been obsessed with this question ever since.
How do you think this would show up in, you know, obviously you've got several advanced degrees, you're in the deep weeds there intellectually and philosophically as a Christian, but for just your average Joe Blow, Mary Sue, whoever, listening to us right now at church, where does this begin to touch? Because I don't think we often think in terms of what does it mean, the physical nature of being a human and then the spiritual nature, the soul side of it. But what does it begin to inform in our daily lives?
So let me mention a couple areas, two that might seem a little more subtle at first, and then one really, really big area. So probably in things like moral issues. We think about the decisions that we make, and we feel senses of blame or praise for what we've done. We feel good about what we've done. We feel bad about what we've done. And we tend to think about that, and I think rightly, we tend to think about that in a spiritual dimension. So this whole immaterial thing called a soul really is very much at play in those types of moral discussions. So that's one area, the moral aspect of life. Then there's our prayer life. Right? We pray, we meditate, we do certain things, we sit in silence, we make no sound, and yet our minds are alive and inflamed, and we're consumed in these moments. And so we think of that too as a very, very spiritual aspect of our life. And then the really big area where we see this is death, because we want to live forever. I think that's probably true of most of us.
Sure.
I suspect even people that take their lives in suicide probably just want to get to the next phase of it, not necessarily end it all, but we want to live forever. And so when we think about death, we think about the immaterial, the soul. We think about it with our granny when she dies, or we think about it with our loved one when they die. But we most definitely think about it with ourselves when we think about our own death.
Yeah, and also, I mean, for a lot of people, we think about, you know, Paul didn't have a whole lot to say about how we take care of our bodies.
Right.
And so when I've done a show, and I usually do it once a year, I haven't done it this year yet, so this is a reminder, I'll do a show, and the title of the show is Fat Pastors. And so you go, does it cost the pastor something in the pulpit if they really struggle with their weight, if they have kind of a gluttonous lifestyle, all that kind of stuff? Because Paul said, you know, it has some value
right.
that we take care of these bodies, but
right.
how much value does it actually have? And in some of the ethics classes that I've taken right here at Southeastern, we talk about cremation.
Yeah.
You go, well, does it really matter what you do with the body? What about people that are destroyed in war action or in earthquakes and their bodies are completely mangled or even burnt to a crisp? Does it matter then? So how do you kind of look at the body versus the spirit? That's what we're going to talk to about today with Jamie Dew. Why the body, why the soul? There's a lot of different positions that have come out of the history of the church. And then what does it mean to us today as we consider some of the big issues? This is Steve Noble with Jamie Dew, Theology Thursday. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, Theology Thursday, of course, with our good friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Also wanted to get back to giving away some tickets to our upcoming event. This is our only public event of the year, and I say our. It makes it sound like there's some big call to action team. You want? Let me introduce you to the call to action team. It's me. I am the call to action team. Now we have people on the radio that help in the production, and like Howard's over there in Winston-Salem, North Carolina right now taking care of me on the air. And, of course, that night when we do Call to Worship, Matt Papa will be there, just a phenomenal praise and worship leader. A testimony that you won't hear much, and we're going to talk about this today as we're considering body and soul from a theological perspective. Walt Heyer, who's now in his mid-70s, and he went down for decades, went down the road of transgenderism, had the sex reassignment surgery, the whole nine, had as much reversed as he could. He's going to share his testimony that night. That is not a testimony most of the powers that be in the United States of America want to hear. It's kind of like the quote-unquote ex-gay testimony, because Walt Heyer, from his own experience and from what God has taught him, and just has an incredible testimony. And then, of course, my slightly older brother from another mother, Bishop Patrick L. Wooden, will be up there, too. We're going to do an onstage interview. And I'll talk to him about Black Lives Matter and racism, a little bit about the election, and then we'll all have some time together in prayer over the upcoming election, because our event, Called to Worship, is on Tuesday, November 1st, just 1 week before the big election, which, of course, everybody's talking about. And so we'll spend some time together that night in prayer. It's going to be an awesome event. Again, it's our only public event of the year and our only fundraiser. And I just thank the Lord. We don't need to raise a ton of money to keep this ministry up and doing what God has it doing. But we have to raise some. So that night, you know, we're shooting for somewhere $30,000, $35,000, which gets us in really good shape for almost the next year. And I just praise God that it's not a huge burden, but it is real, and we have to meet those goals. And by God's grace and provision, we will. But that means you need to be a part of it. So we'll give away some more tickets today. Five callers today. We'll take five callers today. And as many tickets as you think you would need, friends, family, even your sons and daughters. Walt Heyer's story is powerful, but he keeps it pretty much PG. So don't worry about that. It's just an incredible night. So 866-348-7884 if you want to join us here in Raleigh on Tuesday, November 1st. For Call to Worship, that would mean a lot to me, a lot to the ministry, and it would just be a huge blessing. For many of you, I never get to meet you except for here on the radio, and that's just an awesome opportunity to do that. So we'll give away some more tickets today. First five callers, 866-348-7884 or 866-34-TRUTH. We're here with my good friend Jamie Dew, Vice President for Undergraduate Studies out here at the Southeastern, the College at Southeastern, and the Associate Professor of History of Ideas and Philosophy as we unpack body and soul. Real quick, Jamie, well, let's save it for the end. I want to ask you about what's going on at the college, but we'll talk about that as we get to the end of the show. So there's been a few different positions on this, kind of the blend between body and soul over church history. So help us understand those.
Yeah, so there's really basically three major positions. And of course, in each one of these camps or major positions, you'll have a wide variety of versions of those. But the big three, I would say, are, first of all, materialism. And this is advanced by most modern philosophers today and most modern scientists. And this is the view that says a human person just is the physical organism.
We're just stuff.
That's right. You're just a physical, organic machine of sorts. There's nothing immaterial about you, no soul, no spirit, no immaterial mind or anything else like that. It's just bodies and brains that are living and caught up in the life of that person. And, you know, they'll say all kinds of things about that, different versions of materialism. One of the things I think that's right or good about materialism is that it really does, on this view, it takes the physicality of the human being very seriously.
Yeah.
So you can't diminish the arm, the leg, the body, the lungs, the heart, the brain, anything else like this. Physical organism is essential to the human being. And so I actually tend to think that that's right. One of the weaknesses of this is that it doesn't really seem to account for everything in our experience. We have experiences of various kinds that it doesn't seem that we can really account for those on this materialism. Here's one quick example. And it's somewhat philosophical, but I think it's pretty easy to follow. When we zoom in on brains, for example, we're having different kinds of experiences, and we're doing an MRI of the brain while those experiences are taking place. Maybe it's a taste of sugar. It's doing the math problem. It's listening to a song or whatever else like that. Here's what we can see. We can see where in the brain these things are happening. And you put a little lump of sugar on the tongue, and there's a particular part of the brain that will light up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
You ask him to do a math problem, there's another part of the brain that will light up like a Christmas tree. What we find in the brain during these moments, we see where it's happening, but we don't see it. We don't see the experience. What we see is electricity and chemistry, and that's it. You zoom in more, and you get more electricity and more chemistry, and zoom in more and more and more and more.
No meaning behind any of it. It's just chemistry.
What you don't find is the actual taste of sugar or the actual feel of the air. Those experiences, we don't find those, right? So this has led a lot of philosophers to argue that maybe materialism is inadequate, and they're coming back to some other view that has immateriality
to it. There's a little more to it than just that.
Another view is dualism, and there's various brands of dualism. But in short, dualists make two kinds of claims. First claim is they say there's different kinds of stuff, body and soul. I affirm that. Okay, so in that sense, I am a dualist. Dualists tend to make a second claim, though, that's more powerful than that, and they say that you are distinct from the body. You are identical with the soul. So that means Jamie Dew is not this physical organism. Jamie Dew is just this immaterial soul distinct from this body. Okay? So that's a view. And lots and lots
of Christians help you. So you're just the cup. That's what really matters is the wine that's in the cup.
Well, the body is just the cup.
Right, right.
That's right.
The physicality.
The person is the wine in it. That's right. And this view has been held by a lot of Christians today and in the past as well. What I think it gets right is it really does say the physical's there and the immaterial's there. But at the same time, that interaction problem has stumped a lot of people. So there's some things like that. I also tend to think that theologically speaking, this doesn't take our physicality seriously enough. Okay. Then there's views that we would call roughly holism. Holism says that the person Jamie Dew is holistic in that it is this body and the soul together as one. You could call it compound dualism, perhaps. And you've got a lot of different views that have held that view. This is where I want to be today, because I think you really do get the best of both worlds in this case. There's clearly more to us than just our physical bodies. And yet at the same time, I can't diminish or undervalue the physicality of us as well. So that's roughly speaking the lay of the land. And then I want to gravitate towards this holistic account for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah, and it made me think of, and I deal with this with the high schoolers that I teach every week, the Imago Dei, the image of God.
Right.
And immediately everybody goes, well, no, God doesn't look like a human being. We're just talking purely in the spiritual realm. We're talking about your capabilities as a human. It has nothing to do with your physical nature, but creativity and love and self-sacrifice and things like that. That's all the image of God, but it has nothing to do with your material self. Mm-hmm. And then you end up degrading the value of the material self. So
It's
like, it's no big deal. Really, my body.
That's right. And frankly, you could say, when we do a survey of the history of theology to see what theologians have said about the Imago Dei, basically we have substantival views. They would say you're just some rational being with mental capacities that make relationship with God possible. That's one view. You have another view that takes a relational route that says, well, image bearers are those beings that are in an intimate relationship with God, able to have community with God or communion with God. And what I would say is, you know, with these types of major views that theologians have held, you could hold that on any one of those views of human persons that I just talked about, a materialist, a holist, a dualist. I think we could say it on any number of those.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to take these notions of what it means between the body and the soul, and then we'll start applying them to things that we're looking at today. Like I mentioned earlier, transgenderism, even abortion, and even to issues like cutting or tattoos. Mm-hmm. Or somebody on Facebook asked about cremation. Does it really matter what you do to the human body? In the end, that's not what we're talking about, is it? Isn't it just the spirit? This is Steve Noble with Jamie Due. We'll be right back after this. So coming up on Called to Worship Tuesday, November 1st, Rush will not be there, just in case you're wondering. I couldn't afford to bring them in, and quite frankly, I wouldn't. That wouldn't exactly be a great worship event, but Matt Papa will be there. We're still giving away some tickets, so if you want some free tickets to come out to Call to Worship, support the radio ministry, and be a part, it's going to be an awesome event. It always is. The last 2 years and this third year, I expect God to do the same thing. And again, the number one thing I hear from people that come to Call to Worship is they're all kind of shaking their head afterwards. They're like, I've never experienced anything like this. Because you kind of take worship and you broaden it out to where it's testimony, it's prayer, it's community, as well as singing and praising the Lord through music and through lyric. And, well, you know Matt Papa, don't you, Jamie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
I think, theologically speaking, he's the deepest contemporary Christian music artist out there, theologically.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. So he'll be there as well. So if you want some tickets, we want you to be there. So just give us a call, 866-348-7884. We'll take a few more callers before the end of the show. 866-348-7884, Tuesday night, November 1st here in Raleigh. 866-348-7884. Or 866-34-TRUTH, because we really want you to be there. Okay, so as we're talking about the body and the soul, and I also want to get to cremation as well. Mm-hmm. So we've got several topics here we want to look at and apply this teaching and this understanding. Well, let's start with abortion, because this is a big one. This has been around for a while, obviously. And as we consider the body and the soul and the spirit, how does that impact, or how should it impact, our notion on abortion?
Yeah, generally speaking, I would say these types of questions are why this larger theological, philosophical discussion really does matter. How you answer the what is a person question, body, soul, or body and soul, will depend on your, will basically dictate your ability to defend certain types of ethical notions. So, for example, it's often put forward that substance dualism, this idea that I am distinct from my body, it's often put forward that this is how we need to defend a pro-life position, that it's wrong to have abortions because it's basically murder. And here's the rationale. If we say it's just a physical body, a person is a physical body, then that physical body takes time to develop. And so there's clearly a time when it's not a person, and it would be okay during that time to abort.
Sure.
So pro-life people have said, no, it needs to be a person from the very get-go. How can we do that? Not in the physical, they'd say. We could do it in the soul, because the person is the soul. So we'd say at the moment of conception, the soul shows up, and now we've got a person, and now therefore it's sacred the whole time, and we can't commit an abortion. And I think that's true. Certainly, if you are your soul and the soul's there at the moment of conception, that gives you what you need in time to make it personhood. The problem is it backfires. Here's why. If I am first of all, what is murder? Murder is the killing of a person. What is a person on this view? A person is not their body. They are distinct from their body. They are their soul. What does abortion do? Abortion crams scissors into the back of a body's skull, a physical organism's skull. And so it seems to me, by definition on this view, you haven't murdered anybody. You have simply damaged the physical organism that they would live in or ride in. So, yes, substance dualism does give you personhood from the moment of conception, but unfortunately it cuts the legs out of this ethical position that evangelicals are saying, here's how we say it's a person. So I argue, actually, the better position is a holistic position that says a person is a body and a soul, and that's why when the doctor crams those scissors into the back of the skull, they're actually murdering someone because the person is body and soul together.
Right. They're all fully developed. You're not waiting for personhood to emerge later.
That's right.
They're fully a person made in God's image right at that point. And of course, then it's murder, which of course it is. Now, what about transgenderism? This is obviously a big topic now. I've spent some time with some transgendered people over the last few months, hardcore activist transgendered people, 30, 35, 36 operations, the whole nine yards. Mm. And they're talking about, well, my gender versus my body.
Right. Right.
And I think this is, I mean, the topic that we're discussing is really important in understanding transgenderism.
Yeah. So again, I said in the last segment that most Christians today and throughout history have been some kind of substance dualist. And again, as I just said a second ago, substance dualist would say that you are distinct from your body. You are this immaterial soul or this immaterial mind in the body. Okay. Now, what is Bruce Jenner saying? Bruce Jenner is saying, I am Caitlin.
Yeah.
I know I'm in a male's
body.
My
personhood is Caitlin.
That's right. My personhood is not attached to this physical. My personhood is distinct from the physical organism that I'm in. Guess what that is? That's substance dualism all over again. So what I want to say to Christians is, hey, listen, we want to argue against transgenderism. I think you have to move away from this substance dualist perspective that says you are distinct from your body. Once again, I think a holistic account of human persons is far, far better, because now I'd say Jamie Du is this particular soul and this physical organism. That's what makes me me. And if that's the case, I am a male. Not because I've got this ghostly soul that's male. It may very well be a male soul.
But because you have an outie.
That's right.
Not an innie.
I've got a physical organism that is male through and through.
Because that's the problem with Bruce Jenner. Bruce Jenner thinking, no, my gender is just how I identify.
That's right.
That's how I feel about things.
That's right.
What we're saying is, no, your gender identity, which is DNA and designed by God, is integral to who you are.
It's grounded in your physicality.
Bruce Jenner, right, born with a man's body, cannot turn himself into, nor can he ever be, a woman, because that's not who his person is.
That's right. He can fight against it the rest of his life. He can have surgeries. He can take chemicals, but he will constantly be coming back against what's naturally there. And what I want to say is, what's naturally there is part of what I am and who I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's now we have to approach that because you mentioned gender dysphoria, which is a mental condition. This is mental illness. Which there's another study that shows about at least 80% of young people who struggle with their gender identity. I think it's actually 88%. This is the American College of Pediatrics. That 88% of them come out of it once they get through puberty.
Right. Right.
There's somebody on this campus who's been on this show who born a woman physically, and that's her personhood. That's the way God made her. She's a woman. But between the ages of like 8 and 15, she was convinced that she should have been a boy.
Hmm.
But at 15, she had some new friends at school, some girls that really loved her and encouraged her. They didn't kind of talk down to her or make fun of her because of these things that she was struggling with. And within a year or a year and a half, she fully embraced the fact that, hey, I'm a woman. This is the way God made me. And she's walking with the Lord today, fully embracing her femininity. But we really have to have a lot of patience there, because this really is, it's like a mental illness. If I meet somebody in the street and they're mentally ill, I'm not going to beat them up about it.
Right.
I'm going to love them and show some patience.
Yeah.
And we have
yeah.
to understand they're caught in that falsehood that the world is propagating, that narrative, obviously, that, hey, your gender is just a matter of what you think it is.
Right, right.
As opposed to physicality.
Here's what I think is really interesting about this question is that the entire transgender movement comes as the culmination of the sexual revolution.
Absolutely.
And the sexual revolution is born out of a rejection of everything that was seen to be philosophical and religiously traditional. And historically, what that was a substance dualist view that says you are a particular kind of thing, right? And as modernity and then postmodernity came to reject all those traditional notions and reject this substance dualist perspective of essences and persons and natures, then as it ran its full course, we end up in transgenderism where it has collapsed right back down into the tradition that it started off rejecting of saying you're distinct from your body.
Yeah.
And that's the very thing that Bruce Jenner is saying that he is.
And ultimately, go read Romans 1 again, especially the second half of that chapter. And you understand all these things, you know, for people that want to reject God, and everybody knows he exists, that's the whole trick out there. God is the 800-pound elephant in the room. There is no such thing as an atheist. I just say it's an agnostic with an attitude problem. And you've got this understanding that everything, every time we get rid of one of these truths, it's like shooting another arrow into the body of God. We got to get rid of this. So anything that represents some overarching meta-narrative truth, that being God, he's the moral author of everything, just got to get rid of that. And transgenderism, again, right back to the garden. No, your gender is whatever you want it to be. You were not designed by anybody. You're not predisposed to anything. Just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
To me, it's always spiritual in nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's lots of other ethical issues, of course, that this comes up with. I mean, racial issues, you know, skin color is, given the fact that that's grounded in physicality, skin color is part of personhood, too. And so this would give us dignity for all persons everywhere.
Yeah.
All lives, every life matters. Yes, black lives matter. And those are types of things that we have to take very seriously.
Well, that's why it was interesting out in the state of Washington. Remember the name Rachel Dolezal?
Vaguely,
she was the white girl who decided
that's
was going to identify as an African American. And then there were a lot of people that go, hey, she can, if that's what she identifies with, that's fine. So now you're transracial.
Right.
So again, it's a violation of what we're talking about here, body and spirit. No, your skin color was given to you by God. You can't, that's part of
that's
your
right.
personhood.
That's right.
That's just
right.
who you are. And you can't separate. You can't choose. It's not a buffet. What about just set up? We've got less than a minute here before we hit the next break. But just set up cremation.
Oh, gosh. Cremation in a minute. All right. So
no, we'll come back to it. Just start it.
So cremation, death happens and we would destroy the body. We incinerate the body. And, of course, it's very natural now to say, well, then I guess the person doesn't survive. I think that there are ways around that. I don't prefer cremation. At the same time, I don't think that when people get cremated that the possibility of resurrection is gone.
Right. So you get into that. Is it wrong or is it nothing? Well, like a lot of things, it's somewhere in between. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio Theology Thursday, as it is every Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist, including Dr. Jamie Dew, who's with us today. We'll hit that and a few other things when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Of course, every Thursday, Theology Thursday, with our friends out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And every once in a while, somebody goes, hey, I tried to find your studio on campus and I couldn't. To which I say, good.
It's hidden away.
It's hidden away. It's not meant to be like, hey, go down this road and turn right here and you'll get to the studio of that guy that some people hate.
You got to go through a wormhole to get to this
you
gotta thing.
You got to basically go through a wormhole to get here. Yes, it's my secure and undisclosed location. So, but it is great to be out here. I've been out here for 45 and a half years pursuing my master's degree in ethics, which I owe Dr. Heimbach a 10-page paper, which I'm actually going to write next week.
Hey, there you go.
And then a 50-page, my last paper for my master's degree in ethics. And then I'm going to talk to Jamie Dew about becoming a doctor.
Hey, good.
Wouldn't that be
cool?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I think I do want to do that. So, and I'm excited about that. And it's just a blessing to be out here all the time. And just even when I'm not doing Theology Thursday, being on campus when I'm in town is a huge blessing because I know what God is doing up here. So real quick, we're going to dive back into cremation. I want to talk a little bit about just physical fitness as a Christian. Does it matter what we eat? Does it matter that we do Donut Sunday? Does it matter that I never exercise? We'll get into that real quick.
I know I'm getting chubby, but
yeah,
come on,
yeah,
man.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's my way of trying to, you know, iron on iron or donuts on donuts. What about the college? The college at Southeastern, people know there's the seminary here.
Yeah.
But the college is an incredible opportunity, too. What's going on at the college at Southeastern?
You know, I'm not joking. I'm not playing around. I really do mean this. Of course, I understand if you end up going to another college. But if you're a believer and you want your child to be raised in a Christian worldview where we're going to equip them well to go out into the world, you need to come take a look at us. God's doing some great things in this college. It's a wonderful community for your student to grow up in. And I can promise you this, you're going to save a pile of cash by sending your student to us.
Isn't that the truth?
So, you know, we do a lot of different things. We like the seminary. Everything we do comes back to the Great Commission. We're training students to leverage their life for the cause of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Our curriculum in the college is broad, meaning we're not just training pastors and missionaries. We're training lawyers and teachers and businessmen and women. We're training people to go everywhere. So you really do need to check us out at college@southeastern.com. You can go to my webpage, jamiedew.com, and we can give you information about the college. But, yeah, come check us out.
Great place. And the website's beautiful, totally redone.
Yeah.
Just a great job. And then how's the house system working out?
Oh, man, the house system is great. You're familiar with the house system.
Of course, King's College.
That's right. So we started a house system, which is basically every incoming student is placed into one house or another. There's Judson, Fuller, Schaefer, and Lyle, named after key people in the history of the church that represent something of who we are as an institution, missions, kingdom diversity, theology, preaching, so on and so forth. And basically, students find their community in this group, and they live their life together in this. And so it's a way, a very organic way for us to accumulate college culture and life there, and students love it.
This is kind of like the God-honoring, sanctified version of the Greek system.
That's right. That's right. There are no toga parties or keg parties, but there's a lot of community.
And what's the website again?
College@southeastern.com, and you can find out about the house system on that.
Awesome. Thank you. By the way, we have room for one more caller, so we have one more caller. We'll give tickets away to Call to Worship Tuesday, November 1st, here in Raleigh at RFA Church. It's going to be completely awesome. I'm excited about it and look forward to seeing many of you out there. 866-348-7884. We'll take one more caller before we end the show. 866-348-7884 or 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so cremation.
Yeah.
Is it, can we just burn up the body when we're done? No big deal. Or should we be more concerned about it? Maybe less flippant than that.
We can, and God is able to raise it back up. I'm convinced of that. So a lot of people will object to cremation on the grounds of resurrection, and they'll say, well, if you burn the body and cremate the body, what is there to be resurrected? You've eliminated that possibility. And I say to that, no, God is able. We won't get into the technical details. This is actually where my dissertation work right now is focused on. How do we get a physical body back in the resurrection when things like this happen? But it's way too technical to get into right now. I do think it's possible God's able to raise that up. But despite that possibility that God can do that, I do think that this is probably not, I hate to say this, a Christian practice. I mean, it makes sense in the Eastern tradition of Hinduism and Buddhism and all these other religions of the world that they would burn the body because they wanted to free the person from the jail cell of the body. And so it makes sense that they would do those types of things. But in Christian theology, the body, the physical body, is sacred. It's important. And if I'm understanding what Christianity says about human persons properly, then it's part of me. And so I don't think we need to treat the physical body like a piece of trash just because it's not alive anymore. Now, as a pastor, there were some real factors. The real factors were a cheap burial in this country.
Oh, my goodness.
$13,000 at least.
Oh, it's crazy.
And not everybody can do that. You can cremate somebody for around $2,000. And so, you know, I would tell my church members, I get it. I understand. And if that's what you've got to do for practical reasons, rest assured that God can raise them up. But what I want to challenge is the disposition that most of us have that physical bodies just don't matter.
Yeah, like it's no big deal.
Right. That's right.
Well, let me take that and go into the realm. You know, we spend so much money in quick fixes and diets and exercise plans and P90X and whatever. What about the body, the soul, in terms of just maintaining this broken vessel that we have?
Yeah, and you know, I joked around about, hey, I know I'm getting a little chubby and everything, but in all seriousness, this is probably something that we should feel a degree of concern and conviction over. No, I don't think we make our physical body an idol of sorts.
Right.
But at the same time,
as if we can perfect it.
Right. But at the same time, the physical organism really does matter to who we are and what we are. And even if it didn't matter for our identity, metaphysically speaking, it still matters as a piece of God's creation that's very, very good, a display of his handiwork, if you will, that this too is sacred and it must be taken care of. And so, yeah, I think physical exercise and diet and all those types of things are very important. But you know what? Frankly, I would say that about houses and buildings and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, because
the physical world matters.
Because I look at all this, and I said this before the break, and one of my favorite classes that I've taken out here at Southeastern was on the creation mandate, on mm-hmm. creation care as an ethical consideration, because oftentimes we just kind of write off environmentalism.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Our theology stinks. Hey, it's all going to burn up anyway, which is a terrible understanding of that passage of
right.
scripture.
Yeah.
But you have to go back to always, if God created it, regardless if it's human or not, if God created it, it has worth simply because of who created it.
That's right. You know, Thomas Aquinas was answering in the Summa Theologica whether or not amongst thousands of other questions he tried to answer. One question was posed to him, is there anything good in Satan? And to all my students' shock and horror,
wow.
he says, yes. Not any moral goodness whatsoever. He's as morally depraved as he can possibly be. But inasmuch as he still has being, meaning he still exists, that existence comes from God,
yeah.
and that is good. And so his very existence, not the fact, I mean, not like we like him existing, but the very fact that he possesses existence is itself a good thing.
Yeah, and I think that's why, coming back around to the Black Lives Matter issue, we can't write off that somebody's skin color is not a big deal.
Yeah.
Because
right.
because it is. And then you have to take in history and, of course, society and what's happened over time. But to kind of write it off like, well, hey, I wasn't around when we had slaves in America and all that kind of stuff is really a kind of a writing off of the way God made that particular individual.
Yeah, and I tend to think that, you know, we all have a tendency to overcompensate. I don't want to be this, so I go as far the other direction
right,
as I can.
Right.
And we lose our sanity when we do that. But, you know, when a white person revolts against Black Lives Matter, even if they don't like a lot of the political movements that have been attached to that movement, I do think that we're failing to recognize that there has been a particular experience that Black folks have had in this country that it's very different from what white folks have had.
Yeah.
And I think we could be a lot more sensitive to that and understanding of that.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, I've heard some things. I was listening to Tim Keller the other day, who will actually be here in Raleigh next week. I'm going to be broadcasting from the Summit Church where he's going to be speaking next Tuesday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And a friend of his, who obviously was not Caucasian, was telling him, you know, do you think in terms of that there's a white culture?
Hmm.
And Tim Keller was like, no, I just kind of assume that that's the norm,
mm-hmm.
like that's the base
right.
of the American experience, that it's just, well, there's kind of the culture, which
right.
is white, and then there's all these other cultures around them,
yeah,
the Black
yeah.
culture, Italian, whatever,
yeah.
Asian, whatever, and I think we have to be really, really careful, and I think that actually the Black Lives Matter issue right now is just like environmentalism and transgenderism, mm-hmm. I think is a great opportunity for us
mm-hmm.
to bring truth and grace and love and compassion into the conversation, because we can affirm
yeah.
the uniqueness and the beauty of the differing shades of our skin
yeah.
because that's how God made us.
Yeah. We've been saying around here for the last few months and weeks, we really, all believers, not just white believers, not just evangelicals, believers need to recalibrate themselves and come back to remembering what we are first. Before I'm an American, I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Before I'm a Republican, I'm a Christian. Before I'm white or black or any of those other things, I am a Christian first. And following Christ has some very real implications on how we approach these issues.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, if God values it, we need to value it.
Yeah, that's right.
Which then begins to inform, even when you're dealing with transgender people. Abby Austin, first transgendered member of the British military, as soon as she told them that she was going to transition from Ian Hamilton to being a quote unquote woman, you know, they bounced her out. But Abby Austin sat in the same chair you're sitting in about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, for almost 3 hours.
Wow.
And she looked at me at one point, and I say she out of just trying to respect this person. She said, Steve, how do you explain me? That's a pretty powerful question.
Yeah.
And I said, well, Abby, I think like the rest of us and like me too, you're broken. And you acted out of your brokenness to try to create some kind of environment that made sense to you to get rid of your confusion. You acted on your thought that you were actually supposed to be a woman, and you acted on it. But ultimately, the only way that brokenness gets solved is by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And at that point, with Abby and her three other British filming crew in here, I was able to share the gospel. Wow, and good. So we have to remember that. We have to take these things into consideration. It's the way Jesus did it. It's the way we should do it as well. Jamie Dew, thanks for being here, buddy. Always great to have
Always
you.
Always fun, man.
Thanks for being here. Okay, friends, we'll be back tomorrow. Donald Trump's sin and your vote. So, yes, we're going to go there tomorrow here on Call to Action Radio. And God willing, I'll talk to you again there.